Now, lots of texts, by the way, coming in, not surprisingly, about Edwina Curry. And taking issue, as I probably should have done myself when we were talking about the statistics for death from coronavirus across the water as compared to here. Latest figures says one listener per million in the UK, 91, Ireland, 43. They're not equal. Facts are very important during this pandemic. Credit is where it's due. Well done, Ireland. Another one. Why is RTE interviewing Edwina Curry? They refuse to listen to the WHO. They refuse to listen to the EU. And the outcome is thousands and thousands of elderly British people are dying unnecessarily in dreadful circumstances, and all they can do is massage the figures of fatalities. Compare and contrast with the wonderful humane approach of the EU's most dynamic country, Germany. That's from John in Clontarf. Another one, signing off as hubris. Hi, Edwina Curry referenced the UK's effectiveness in dealing with COVID-19 compared to Ireland. According to the Johns Hopkins tracker, the UK mortality rate is running at 9.28 per 100,000 people. The Irish rate is 4.3. But I suppose a lot of this will depend on the kind of testing and the rate at which results come through. But when it comes to death statistics, they're perhaps a bit more definitive. And the last one, Edwina Curry says Ireland has more COVID cases per head of population in comparison to the UK. Well, their recovery rate is three times worse than Ireland's. Lies, damn lies and statistics, says another caller. Now, as we know, there's been much spotlight in recent days on whether or not enough is being done to ensure residents in direct provision centres are able to protect themselves from COVID-19. Some residents, including healthcare workers, say they are unable to self-isolate or take adequate steps to distance themselves from others. With cases confirmed in a number of centres, the question is enough being done? Brian O'Connell has been tracking this issue for a number of weeks. Brian, what is the current position?
Well, I'd reported on this in early March, Sean, when already residents and NGOs were expressing concerns at that stage at whether or not the direct provision system could adequately protect residents against COVID-19 or at least limit their exposure. We know asylum seekers in direct provision centres in several counties now have tested positive for COVID-19 and some have been placed in hospital. Now, amid mounting criticism, the Department of Justice has committed in a short space of time to 650 additional beds. That's to relieve the pressure on what would have been near capacity centres. But the worry is, even with this measure, cluster may develop even further. Now, for anybody who hasn't been in a direct provision centre, you can have situations where multiple people are in one room, sometimes in bunk beds, for example. Families can be in hotel-type rooms, while some centres I've been in would have more self-catering-type options. Mainly residents would eat all together. So you can see then how self-isolating can be very challenging. Let's begin, though, Sean, with one resident's recent experience. He says he was treated in hospital for COVID-19. And when he was discharged eventually, he had to self-isolate, but he ran into significant difficulties in his centre, where he says they could not accommodate him initially. His issues started during a bus journey when he began to feel very unwell.
And then when I got to the hospital, and then they saw that, okay, you're having conflicting issues that might be symptoms of also of COVID. However, what we need to do, we need to run it. Test on you, a swab test. And then when they drew the blood, they said your symptoms are very close to that of COVID. They started giving me treatments. They were good. They were very, very fantastic. And then I received the treatment, which I'm very grateful to the people of St. James for. However, moving forward, on Tuesday that came, I was summarily going to be discharged and I was needed to be isolated further for like another 14 days or 7 days, just to be sure that I'm really, really recovering.
So there's four of you in one room in the direct provision centre.
Yes.
You were told by doctors, obviously, you had to self-isolate. That seems pretty difficult if there's four of you in a room.
Absolutely, absolutely. They told me that they do not have the availability to take me back to isolate.
So it's clear to you that you couldn't return to direct provision because there wasn't a provision there to allow you to self-isolate.
Absolutely.
So, Brian, that's a case where the man had to stay in hospital, did he, because there were no facilities for him to self-isolate in the direct provision centre?
That's correct. That's what he was told, Sean. This is a relatively recent case. And I suppose, despite the fact, I mean, when I put in queries in early March. And again, recently we were told every centre needs to make allowances for those persons who need to self-isolate. I mean, that was his experience pretty recently. Now, there have been moves in recent days to try and take some of the stress off centres. Many have been operating at capacity in recent times. The Department of Justice has been looking for additional capacity, as we know, in recent years. There have been some very well publicised disputes in certain areas, for example. But this particular individual, he remained in hospital and he didn't need to be there. And eventually he was able to go. He returned to his centre and into the four-person room that he was living in. So I asked him then about the people that he was sharing a room with, who I imagine, I said to him, weren't too happy to be in such a small space together.
Absolutely. So they told them that, look, you guys also have to now isolate in the same room. You have to stay back in this room, locked up. We'll bring you food. You will not be able to mix up with other people.
What's your assessment in your centre? Is it possible to self-isolate anywhere?
It isn't. In each room, there are four people in a room. Four. So it's not possible to isolate, except they have to probably put like seven people in another room just to have one person in a different room.
Is there a lot of fear in direct provision centres at the moment?
Oh, there is. There is. You know what happened moving forward was that they wrote a petition that I should not be allowed back into this place, even after completing my isolation.
After your 14 days of isolation, you still had difficulty getting back into your direct provision centre.
Yes. A very huge one. And I'm still suffering with the stigma because they told everybody that this gentleman has got this thing. So stay away from him. Even people that normally greet me, normally say, hello, hi, nobody says any words to me.
How do you feel about things now?
I feel very stigmatized because right now they don't want to talk to me. They see me as somebody who's like an alien. I understand the social distancing, but I'm just seen as the bad egg.
And that's very hard to do in a direct provision centre where you all eat your food communally in a hall or in a room. It's inevitable there are going to be persons within their direct provision who are going to get COVID-19. It seems ridiculous that you would be stigmatised because of that.
If anybody gets it here, I can assure you I will be stoned. Because the whole fingers will be pointing at me. Even after I have been treated and isolated, they will always look at it that this is the person who originated this.
So, Brian, that's one man's experience. Now, I know the NGOs working in centres, they have some concerns as well.
Yes, and some of them, Sean, have been raising this issue for quite a while now. Fiona Finn, for example, in NASC, they had been calling for an audit of centres in terms of their capacity to provide self-isolation about a month ago when I last spoke to her. And many are calling as well very specifically for the issue of healthcare workers who are living in direct provision centres, travelling every day to work in our hospitals and then travelling back to direct provision centres. They want that particular issue addressed and they want those people to ensure that they can isolate and they can remain in a centre that's appropriate in terms of how they need to self-isolate and so on. So here's Fiona Finn from NASC.
There are a number of populations living in direct provision that we are very concerned about. Firstly, our healthcare workers. We have been asking for the last 4 to 5 weeks that the Department of Justice move healthcare workers out of direct provision immediately. These are people who are working in our healthcare system, caring for, looking after the sick and elderly in our community, and they're moving back into direct provision where they are living in congregated settings. And obviously that is a recipe for disaster in spreading the disease. 650 new bed spaces have been announced, which is welcome. And as far as we're aware, about 250 of these bed spaces have now come on stream. And it seems that currently the department are using these new bed spaces to what they call thin out the population in direct provision. That is, move people who are currently sharing rooms. So people who are, like, would have maybe 4 or 5 in a room. They're moving them into these new bed spaces. However, within these new bed spaces, people are still sharing rooms. Again, that makes social distancing extremely challenging. And asylum seekers are concerned. They want to protect their health and welfare, and they want to protect the health and welfare of their fellow residents and of the wider community. Already in one centre up the country, there is what's called a cluster in one direct provision centre, and the whole centre has gone into quarantine, which is making life very, very, very difficult. Direct provision, residents in direct provision are scared. They're worried about their health, the health of their family, and the health and the welfare of the wider communities.
So that's Fiona Finn from NASC, the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre. Excuse me. I also spoke to Massey, Sean. They're the Movement of Asylum Seekers in Ireland. They've been working very hard on this issue, as you can imagine, and they've been documenting positive cases across several centres, and they confirmed that stigma, which we heard from the first resident, is a real, real issue because of the pressure residents are under living in centres. Sanctuary Runners, fantastic organisation, they've been highlighting consistently the issue of healthcare workers living in centres and trying to get them moved out. So there's a lot of focus being put on this issue. There are some positives, I have to say. For example, one centre which I would have been in previously, and I would have highlighted issues around crowded rooms. I was speaking to a resident in there last night. He told me up to 50 residents have been moved in the last few days, so that in that centre, which is probably one of the most packed that I've seen over the years, social distancing is now possible.
So that's the good news, as it were. What has the Department of Justice had to say about this, Brian?
Well, when I looked at this in March, I was told back in March, contingency plans were in place. Now, as I said, in recent days, a lot of concerns have been raised. So the specific measures that are in place now, for example, will help self-isolation become a better reality. Centres with canteens, for example, are providing takeaway facilities, and they've been staggering meal times, so that's to reduce contacts between residents. The majority of these 650 temporary new beds, they're now being used to support social distancing because they're reducing the number of residents who are in existing communal centres. And then they're consulting with the HSE. A large number of transfers as a result of that consultation of residents are being transferred to these 650 temporary beds. That was completed last weekend. There's some small number of additional transfers, as I understand, are going to take place early this week. The Department of Justice say they're continuing to work intensively on managing the challenges of this pandemic in relation to direct provision centres. So you can expect more announcements from the department in relation to direct provision in the coming days.
OK, Brian, thank you very much indeed for that report. Just time for one or two more texts on John Prine. I see on that track that we heard earlier, listener text to say 167 and 164 year old just after having a jive to John Prine. Thank you. Our pleasure. Another one, aviation must shrink. Climate crisis hasn't ended. Another one, it's ridiculous to be talking about aviation ever getting back to business as usual. This sector has been the principal vector for the spread of the disease worldwide and thus the cause of thousands of deaths. And then there's its massive contribution to the climate crisis. That from a Mayo listener. And then and another one saying, I don't know where Edwina Curry got her figures for death rates from the virus. UK, 6,259 deaths from a population of 66.65 million. Ireland, 210 from 4.9 million. The UK rate is based on population. It's more than twice the Irish rate. And then a last one, aviation must be massively curbed post-COVID-19 as a massive contributor to climate change. The climate change, climate crisis has not gone away. Now, in news headlines, the number of clusters of coronavirus in nursing homes has more than doubled since the weekend. Figures from the Health Protection Surveillance Centre show that there are now 86 nursing home outbreaks. Almost 1,400 healthcare workers have the virus, accounting for almost a quarter of the cases. And OnPost says its branches will close at 1 p.m. this Good Friday and will not reopen until Tuesday, the 14th of April. That is our lot for today. Thank you for listening. The programme produced by Brian Lally. Research, Ciarán Dunn. Broadcast coordinator, Geraldine Collins on sound. Ciarán Cullen, over now to Ronan.